Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a book, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Get a fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is Fran Lewis, and this is MJ Network. MJ in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce. And you're going to absolutely, just once you start listening, you're not going to ever put the phone down. The title of the book is Some Kind of Truth. The author, Wesley Smith, is here. And you're going to want to read this. You're going to want to get a couple of copies, too. Pittsburgh crime reporter Steve James returns home to find a mysterious package waiting outside his apartment door. At first, Steve fears the package could contain a deadly threat from a local mob boss pressuring him to retract his story, which helped him put behind bars. Instead, Steve finds a junior driver's license belonging to Rebecca Ann Turner, a teenager who went missing from a party 25 years ago, and a USB drive containing a video of her murder. And there's a whole lot more. So welcome to MJ Network, and anybody that doesn't read Some Kind of Truth, you're missing some kind of loss. What can I say? So, How did you start this with the ominous package? And Steve, how did he react to receiving this?
I wanted to drop Steve and the audience into the mystery right away, having the characters and readers wondering why the package was left for him and what was inside. And, you know, Steve's wondering, you know, if the package is related to the mob boss who's been, the mob story who's that he broke. And if this is a way to get him to retract his story and maybe reveal his sources so they can take them out and, you know, his the case cannot go to trial.
So what thoughts went through his mind? What thoughts would go through somebody's mind when they receive something like that?
Steve's shocked. He doesn't understand why this was sent to him, how he could possibly relate to this the contents of the package, because he's from Pittsburgh. He's a Pittsburgh crime reporter. So what's in the package he realizes is not his beat, far, far outside of his normal reporting range. So he has no clue what's going on, or just like the readers have no clue what's going on.
Well, it's scary. So when he sees him, what does he call his editor? What was the point? When he sees him, how does he create the interaction? Why was he given 72 hours to get more information? I take it he didn't really want him to solve the case.
Charlie and Steve are friends. Charlie is Steve's editor at the Pittsburgh Tribune, and Charlie is well aware of Steve's demons, his alcoholism, from his time as a war correspondent in Afghanistan. And this particular case with Rebecca contains a video of her murder, and Steve relates to this because he's been filmed while being tortured. So Rebecca's story resonates with Steve, and he wants to solve it. But Charlie's not so sure he wants Steve to get into this. And he knows this is taking Steve down a very, very dark path that probably Steve shouldn't go. And it's going to only make the demons inside him worse. So he tries that, and also they have evidence in their hands, you know, that needs to be passed over to the police. But Steve's pretty persuasive and kind of turns the table on Charlie and gets him to agree to give him at least 72 hours to look into the case. And if he doesn't have anything by then, we'll then make it pass everything over and Steve will drop it.
Well, he thinks he'll drop it.
Yeah,
so
he thinks he'll drop it. Steve's not going to drop
who
it.
Who is Rick? He has no, of course he's not. If he's anything like me, he's not going to drop it either until you find the answers. That's me. If somebody doesn't answer my question, I'll find 10 more people that will. And that you have to. So who is Ricky and why does he call him? And what was in the package? Does he watch the video? And if you watch a video like that, that must be scary.
Yes. Ricky works the AV tech department of the Pittsburgh Tribune. He's in charge of the reporters, the online reporters, so they kind of, like, catch stories that come across on, like, Facebook and things like that and, you know, kind of get them out there to their audience as fast as possible. But he controls some of the other things also within the inner workings of the Tribune. But he lets Steve wants Ricky to view it because Ricky's very good with the technical side of things. And he wants to know if Ricky sees anything in the video that it could possibly be a fake video sent to him, you know, to try to send him on a wild goose chase or something like that.
That's the point. And they can do, these technology people can find out things that other people can't, which is really amazing.
Right.
And it's what,
Steve definitely is old school in that respect.
Now, the article in the paper remembers that the girl whose license he gets, Rebecca Turner, why call the reporter that did the story back then?
He calls Amy. Because she is a local reporter in Hanover, very close by to where Rebecca Turner is from, who has been working on a series of cold cases around the local area where she is. And her first case was Rebecca's. And he writes the article that Steve finds. So he calls her up to see if there's any new information that she has gotten since the article was written. But unfortunately, no. There is nothing else. It's at a standstill.
When a reporter calls another reporter, are they straight with them? Or do they just tell you what you think you want to hear?
I can't really answer that. I don't really know. I would hope so, but, you know, in the media business, sink or swim, you know. And Steve's a little unethical in that way anyways, so, you know, he's playing this close to the vest, as he does with most things, and he's kind of always walking that tightrope of, you know, ethics.
Most people are like that, unfortunately. So what's the significance of the word, of the saying, play me?
I wanted Steve to realize right away that whoever sent him the package wanted him to know there was a video file on there to make him watch, to allow him to know that this needed to be watched. There's not a file on there, there's no pictures on there, it's a video. And that hits in Steve's very subconscious level of his thinking of, oh, this can't be good, especially with what he's been through.
Now, who is Palazzo, and how does he connect to the story? And why the threat of Charlie releases the package to the feds? Something will change in the story.
Palazzo is a local mob boss who's affiliated with the Paducah crime organization out of New York. He's a money launderer who washes the DeLuca's money through subsidiary companies that smell smut magazines and videos. And Steve has withheld incriminating evidence from about Palazzo from his story, just in case Palazzo and his mob lawyers, or I should say Palazzo and his or Palazzo's goons, in case Palazzo sends his goons after him to try to intimidate Steve from, to try to intimidate Steve. So he's kept that evidence behind just in case.
Well, we didn't get to the good part yet, but we will. Now, he works, tell us about the Hanover Daily, and what was his first impressions of Amy?
The Hanover Daily Record is a small local paper in Hanover, Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a real paper. That is completely fictitious. So anybody, mm-hmm. the town of Hanover is real. The paper is fictitious. So if anybody's looking, that's not real. But Steve's taken with Amy right away. She's stunningly beautiful, very smart, and she just the sight of her kind of throws him off his game. Right away, he just wasn't expecting her to look her in her eyes when he met her at the top of the steps. He was not expecting that.
She's got a lot of question marks about her, I'll tell you that. So she does cold cases, and she decided to pick Rebecca. So why did she want that one, and what was her reason? And he explained how he received a video and everything. And did she want to write the story? Does she want to review the video? Because there was a question mark about her.
Well, Amy knows Rebecca from high school. They obviously went to the same school together. So she knows of Rebecca. She knows about her disappearance, and it has led her into a life of reporting, and that was why she wanted to do the cold cases in the first place. What was the second part of the question?
Good question here. He received the video? Does she watch the video of Rebecca's murder?
Not. She does. Yes and no. She does sort of kind of, but she ends up, it happens later in the book, but she ends up walking out because she can't take what she's actually seeing.
I don't think I would want to watch that either.
No, nobody would.
Nobody would ever, but I'm sure that there are police that have to watch that. And they don't have a choice but to watch it when there's a criminal case. So that must make it,
I'm positive there are.
I know, because I've interviewed quite a number of them. And I get some graphic descriptions. I go, it's a good thing I can't see that. What can I say? How did you decide how to create the videos? And how and why does it relate to his time? He was in Afghanistan. So he has memories of that also. So that must have put him really upset.
Right. The video, what he watches is horrific. And I really tried with the description of what Steve sees to only describe what is needed for the plot and nothing else, because I did not want to go into exploitation. Because if you go further than that, further than what's needed, it's now exploitation, and I didn't want to do that. That wasn't my interest. But Steve needed to pull clues from the video, so that meant he had to watch the video. So anything you read in the book is only there for that point, nothing more. But for him witnessing it, it just pulls up all his past traumas and his own stuff that he hasn't dealt with, which, causes him to smoke more, causes him to drink more, causes him to get off his game a little bit more as well. It really upsets him.
A lot of people go to drinking or smoking or worse when they're upset. They even go to drugs. And it was glad you didn't include that. It happens. It's like a nervous habit or like a release. I'm going to drink something. I'm going to take some whiskey. I'm going to take some smoke. My vice is coffee. I stick with that. If I get upset, I have seven cups a day. It's worth it. Trust me.
I think it's a coping mechanism. You know, it's to dull the pain, the internal pain. You know, living with trauma is very hard to deal with on a daily basis. You know, and you know, it doesn't matter what it is, whether you were in war, whether you lost a parent, whether you even you lost an animal, a beloved animal. It's still trauma. It hurts. You know, and some people can't deal with that pain.
So this is he just looks at the video one more time, right? So what does he think he's going to find? And how would you describe the killers then one more time?
Well, the first time Steve views the video, he can't watch it. It's too much, and he kind of just absorbs it audio. I don't know if that's the right word, the audio of it. So he just doesn't look away. But the second time he goes back to view it, he knows he has to watch it. And that puts him on edge, but it also makes him acutely aware that he can look for details. And that's when he starts to pick up little things in the video that he knows are clues down the road that will help him identify these three killers of Rebecca on the video. And they are brutes. I would say they aren't men, they're monsters. That's the best way I can describe them without giving anything
I would
away.
Imagine, yeah. That's scary. For people to be so evil and crooked, and why? And then you wonder why in Devon Blazes they picked her. So how did you create the scene with Dennis Turner, the father? Why was he so forthcoming?
Dennis Turner is very interesting. He's Rebecca's father. He's lost everything, including his wife who died of cancer. She also never knew what happened to her daughter, just like Dennis has never found out. So when Steve and Amy show up saying they have some new evidence, he's very willing to cooperate with them because the police, up to this point, have not figured out what's going or have not found anything about his daughter. She's just disappeared. So they don't know anything. So he's eager to he wants answers, and he's willing to do what he has to do to find out what happened to his daughter.
I don't blame him. If this is a real story, I tell you to call Kelly Ziegler and call Justice, because they take all the cases like that. I love that program.
Right.
Absolutely love
it. And a lot of Some Kind of Truth is, I embellish in a lot of areas, you know, or stretch the truth, no pun intended, with actual ethics and stuff of what people can do. But it's a story. But a lot of what my goal in writing this was to kind of give you that feel of a novelization of like a Forensic Files or a Cold Justice. You know, it was kind of that was my attempt when I wrote this. It was that's kind of what influenced the book.
I got that, didn't I? Not bad.
Yep.
So
yeah.
Tell us about Wendy. And her friendship with Rebecca. Who is Wendy, and how is she friend with Rebecca? And who was Sheriff Winslow back then?
Wendy, like you have already said, is a friend of Rebecca's, and she's had a rough home life. Her parents were kind of deadbeats, and you know, didn't really take care of her. And her and Rebecca had a friendship when they were younger, and then Wendy moved away, and then they rekindled that friendship in high school, but. Wendy had by that point changed into a kind of a rebellious kind of nature. She's making bad decisions, but Rebecca's kind of the one shining light in her life. You know, it's like the one person who's keeping her from going over the edge into a part where she cannot come back from.
Well, they were. They went to see other people, didn't they? Who else did he go to get information from, Amy and Steve?
Yes, they went and saw a couple people who had found a couple other bodies also with flash drives, like what was in the package Steve got. And they start to think that maybe Rebecca isn't the only one who's been murdered by these three monsters that were on her video.
Mm. So who is, I have this, my questions, I have tons of them here. Who is Tully and how does he come to find a body and where? That's so weird.
Tully's a local farmer.
Yeah,
who gets up
I
like in the
him.
Morning and just, you know, kind of drives around the property to make sure there's no junk around. And he's found kids partying at certain places in his cornfield. And he checks these certain places just to make sure no one's in there doing anything they shouldn't be. And that's when he comes across another body. And I don't want to say who the name is.
No.
Because I don't want to give it away.
No, I'm not going to give it away either. It's really scary. So how do you create the character trait of a killer? How do you create a character trait of a character profile of a killer? I mean, the forensics guys do it, and they all do it. But how do they create this? And how do they know that they got the profile right?
Well, if you're talking about Steve, if you're talking about Steve and Amy, how do they create the character trait? I don't know if they really do. I think Steve is doing a little bit of guessing, you know, and trying. I think he's doing a little bit of trying to connect the dots in his mind, and maybe a little bit verbally to Amy. Like he's not sure, but he's kind of thinking out loud. You know, this could be this way. This could mean there's a pack of serial killers on the loose. You know, who are now, who have years ago targeted Rebecca and are now starting again with the death of a certain person that Joe Tully found. So that's his character analysis. I mean, as best as he can do with what he knows at that point in the story.
Okay, so I crossed out the next question because it might not be a good one. Okay. I watch, like I said, I watch Cold Justice, I watch Dateline, I watch all of those. They're really cool. What do people go to the crime scene? What do they hope to find? Because in every single episode of all these programs, they go to the crime scene. And how did Winslow help? I mean, it probably makes a point, but after 35 years, you wonder, can they really do anything?
I think the crime scene, the people going to the crime scene, and this is just my personal opinion, I think it just gives them a feel for what happened there. You know, it puts them in that space to understand how events unfolded, you know? And it allows them to create a analysis, even if it's not completely correct, of how things could have happened. You know, they can walk the room, they can, you know, just, you know, how far would someone have to be before they were stabbed or grabbed or, you know, whatever the case. You know, Don Winslow, he's a former sheriff in Abbottstown, where Rebecca is from. And the department in the Abbottstown Police Department was disbanded because of budget cuts. So Winslow is now retired, but he has he's haunted by Rebecca's case because it's an unsolved case and he could never solve it. So he decided to take Rebecca's file and copy it. So he always has it with him, and he likes to go back through it from time to time. And he says in the book it haunts him like an unsolved mystery episode. So
that's amazing.
He tries to figure out what you know, he goes through it to try to figure out if maybe he missed something, and maybe he could find Rebecca at the end and put closure to the case, but like everyone else, he hasn't been able to.
Let me close this one out. And who is Hansen, and how come Wendy brought him up? Why did she do that? Beginning to wonder.
John Hansen's, well, Wendy was dating John Hansen at the time Rebecca disappeared. And she just offhandedly brings him up. And Steve starts to suspect there's a little more to John Hansen than what Wendy says at first, because, you know, he's not a great guy. I'll just put it that way.
None of these people are great guys. Any one of them. I mean, even the main characters got, you know, suspect, whatever. I'm reading a book now, I won't say who the author is, that I'd like to kill off the main character because she's an idiot. What can I say? And everything she does is, like, really dumb. And at the end, you realize she should have woken up before. So,
yeah,
I don't want to say this next one. So how does Steve use the video and the photo of the crime scene, and how do they find out where this other murder took place? I don't want to say who.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, so after Winslow gives him the file, there are some crime scene photos in there. And the car that Rebecca was driving that night was found abandoned on a service road in the middle of the woods. And Steve, going to the scene and getting a feel for it, like we've already talked about, he matches up approximately where the car would have been at at the time it was found. And then looking at the photos, he realizes that the car is what he believes at first, backed in, and it's also covered in mud. But there's no tire track in the road, the service road. So the mud couldn't have come from the service road. So the mud had to come from somewhere else. He starts to realize that Rebecca most likely wasn't in that car when it was hit at that point.
That is so weird. The whole murder is crazy. And the trick is, after 25 years,
right.
You never know if they're going to find. Yeah, well, the case I watched this morning, for real, called Justice, was 34 years old. And they finally think they got the guy. But when you look it up, you don't know if they ever got him arrested. But they did have the right guy. I knew the right guy from the beginning. I figured it out. So,
yeah.
Tell us about Audrey. What's her thing? And what is her story? And why? When I talked about her, it's like I got a red flag about her. I didn't trust her.
How do I explain Audrey without giving too much away? Okay. Audrey is a wife of one of the recently murdered victims. And she suspects something about her husband that kind of gives a red flag even to Steve and Amy, that he might not have been on the up and up, you know. Like, his outward life is a man who is known around the community for his work, and he's kind of there's this front, but there's something that Audrey notices about him, notices about her husband, that, you know, she doesn't like, and it kind of piques Steve's intuition that maybe he's not the person not the poor soul they thought he was being murdered.
Well, people, you know, they complain that people are perceptive. And sometimes when you just meet somebody for the first time, you know, you get like a cold feeling. And that could be a problem because you hate them right away. I know. I do that a lot, which is not good. Now, we have Amy and Jeff. and Steve, and why did they have a falling out, and what was the reason?
Well, Steve being Steve, decides to go Lone Ranger and dig up some evidence that he really shouldn't be messing with. I guess, you know, so, you know, he does a little breaking and entering and, you know, finds out some stuff that finds out information that he really, really couldn't get his hands on, but does it anyways, you know, through a source, quote unquote. And Amy gets a little upset at him because she thinks he's going to, you know, take the story and exclude her when they have an agreement that they're going to work on this story together. So here he is going off on his own, but you know, he says it's to you know, protect her because he did it on, you know, he broke the law to obtain the evidence. Well, but she don't want to hear that. She wants to go right along with him.
Well, people will decide that at the end, who's right,
right,
and who's wrong. That's all I will say about
right.
that. Now, how did you create the scene? Sheriff Mika was not exactly the nicest person in the world. How did you create the scenes, and why was he giving them a hard time? And what were the conditions that allowed them to view the videos?
Sheriff Mika is the sheriff of in Hanover. And he has taken all the cases from Abbottstown when the department expanded. So he's now in control of Rebecca's case. And he doesn't like reporters. You know, it's that old adage of, you know, reporters and police, you know, not getting along. But he really has a disdain for them. So they persuade him to share information because they have Rebecca's murder on tape or on video. So now it's a little, you know, quid pro quo, you know, there.
That's amazing. Now, before I forget, I don't want to forget, tomorrow they really tested me to the nth degree. I'm going to interview Dana Perry, who's really, everybody knows, R.G. Belsky, Dick Belsky, 3 books, new series, I had to read them all. Seriously, I read all 3 of them in one day because they wanted the questions right away. And it's a new series, and you're going to love it. On the 23rd, one of my favorite people, Baron Britcher, Knife River. On the 1st, His Honor Stephen McGuire, Fractured Power. He is the former Chief Justice of the Trade Commission. And on the 6th, I am so honored, Janie and Krantz, People That Live in Glass Houses. And that's just some of May. I have booked the last show in August. So if anybody else comes out with anything in the end of June or August, you better speak up now because I got nothing till September. I don't know how I did it, but I did. So that's what's coming up so far. Now, what was the statistic about the killer that made Martin upset? What would you say about this killer, and why would you call him sadistic?
He has a peculiar laugh when Rebecca is on Rebecca's video, and that sticks out to Steve right away. He notices that instantly, and while they're watching the videos, he laughs, and that is Steve's tip to be like, oh, these murders are related to Rebecca's. Not just they are a continuation of the murder, the continuation of a murder from years ago. They are actually related to the crime.
So you also included stuff, I've been reading an awful lot about people in Afghanistan and Iran and all of that. How did you create his memories? Because I felt like I was there with him.
Well, Steve is loosely based on NBC reporter Steve Engel, Richard Engel, I'm sorry. He was captured and held at one point. So Steve's that part of Steve's backstory is loosely based on Richard Engel.
Oh, wow.
What happened what happened to him, that was just completely fabricated. I just pulled from like different sources and tried to make it as real as possible, what I believe would happen, but I have no actual sources that I pulled from to create those themes.
That's amazing. I love Richard Engel. It's hard to watch them over there. So how did you create the interaction between Amy Steve and the person that's bad?
Do you mean when they go to the? I'll just say the farmhouse. The farmhouse.
Yeah.
That was what. Okay. Up until that point, Steve is kind of getting the feeling that they're being followed. Like he keeps seeing something as the story is going along that picks him off that they're being followed and something's not right. So when they go to this farmhouse, they don't want to divulge why they're there or where what it is really. They are secluded. They are alone. And the killer sees a prime opportunity to strike, so they don't reveal secrets that are at the farmhouse.
That is scary. And the ending of the book was like, oh, my God. I had a funny feeling. So what happens when they interview Wendy Miller and he gets a strange feeling about her? A lot of times I watch these interviews, and I think that they're either programmed or told what to say. So what did I get the feeling that maybe somebody told her what to say, or she just decided this is what she's going to do? How do you know if somebody's lying?
Well, Steve knows Wendy hasn't been forthcoming as it is because he's already read Winslow's interview with her. So going into the interview with her, he already knows she's not going to be forthright with him. So his intuition of her being a reporter is already heightened. So while she's explaining her end of the story, you know, she's beating around the bush and not really coming out with what they want to hear. And it's not until after they leave that Steve realizes she's made a flub and she said something that she didn't realize she said. And it's that moment that she puts it together that it's she knows more than what she has ever revealed before, and then he confronts her with the truth.
So January 5th, 1999, what is the significance of that date?
It's when Rebecca disappeared. Other than that, there is no real significance to it. It's just the date that she disappeared.
That's sad. But a lot of times, too, because, like I said, I've read thousands of books, too many, and even watching these, you know, Dateline Uncovered, Dateline Revealed, Dateline, you know, Cold Justice, Murder in the Heartland, Murder in New York, all of them, sometimes what happens is that they report a person missing, so why doesn't the police take them seriously? All of a sudden, they you know, like, whatever. They don't believe that. They just don't do anything about it. And they don't take it seriously. Why does it take them more than 24 hours, you know, or 48 hours to check into it?
That's it depends
scary.
On the age, right?
Yeah,
you
well,
know,
she
I
was,
mean, with a child, they'll do it right away. But with an 18-year, you know, anybody over 18, they can do what they want, so they're not going to dive into it right away. And, you know, let's face it, you know, some people, you know, aren't – the sad thing is some people aren't, you know, high priority, you know, and it's like –
Yeah, I know.
You know, and then you have the manpower of the police department being stretched so thin. You know, there's only so many people working a case, you know. And cops, as much as we – want them to be superhuman, are actually human, and they make mistakes. You know, things get missing. You know, just It's a sad part, and it's something in my research of writing crime fiction that I find, like, over and over, you know, or you've probably seen in the countless series that you watch. You know, it's like the little things that happen, a small misplaced evidence, you know, a DNA not being submitted. You know, it's that stuff that always ends up breaking the case, you know. It's always the little oversight, not like some big oversight that causes a case to go cold. And then sometimes, you know, it's just that there's no evidence either.
Well, the case I saw this morning, actually, I think they just blew it. They missed it right away. I mean, Kelly Ziegler and Steve got it right away that this guy was having trouble with the girl that was killed, and she worked in the church and whatever. She requested cleaning supplies, and just from listening to the evidence, she realized they missed it 25 years ago. And whether they arrested him, we hope, you know, you don't know. So why did they go, I know that's what's scary. What is, this was I found fascinating, what is S&M Solutions, and what does that have to do with anything?
S&M Solutions is a subsidiary company that Anthony Palazzo has created, where he takes the DeLuca crime family's money, so their drug money, their dealings, they're all their illegal money, and he funnels it through this company that he has. But what he does how he uses it is he takes it and produces like smut magazines and pornography, and then sells that on the internet and you know, to people who like that stuff. Therefore, when the money comes in, it's now clean, and he can keep his cut and send it back to the DeLuca family, and everything looks, you know, right.
That is scary.
But that's what Steve broke. Steve figured that out, and then he broke that story. So.
Well, then the ending was like, oh my God. I had a funny feeling, but I'm not going to say what. So why does he go visit the prison, and what is revealed when he goes there? Because all of a sudden, when you read the last two chapters, there's a whole lot of people involved, and you realize that this was manipulated. That's just really scary.
Yeah. I don't want to give away too much, but he does go to visit Palazzo because he does realize that Palazzo is involved, but not directly involved with what happened to Rebecca. That's all I'll say.
Now, when somebody like Palazzo, I like to know, sometimes the bad guys are more cool than the rest of them. When somebody does a favor for the police or the FBI in prison, do they get a break in their sentence, or do they get better treatment, or if they don't do it, they get killed? Because I often wonder sometimes when I watch these programs, I'm going to make a deal, but I'm not going to make a deal unless I get something for it. So did he get a deal or anything for it?
He got a deal with Steve. That's it. He didn't get a deal anywhere else. He just got a deal with Steve, and Steve will probably keep up his end of the deal on that, as long as Palazzo holds up his end of the deal.
Well, you never know.
Yeah, you never know.
I learned a long time ago. My dad taught me this too. The only person you could trust yourself is the person whose face you're looking at, even if you get scared of yourself in the mirror. Seriously.
Right.
So
right.
I learned that a long time. I learned that a long time ago. I'm looking at this, and I don't want to give away anything in that chapter. Boy, I have to tell you, people, once you start reading this, you're gonna want more. So why did he help him, right? So what did he help, and then what did he learn? Did he give away any major information? How did Steve put it all together at the end? That he realized that there's some kind of truth is really whoa.
Yeah. Because the ending is what it is, I gotta kind of tiptoe around it. I'll just say Palazzo gives him some information that Steve is Steve needs to know the whereabouts of a certain character, and he,
yeah.
they can't find him. So he, Palazzo, has a way to contact this person, and he gets Steve that information, but he gets Steve some other information, too, that they're able to tie to an even bigger, more insidious plot that's actually been going on.
All I know is that when I read the last couple of pages, I realized that not everybody is what they seem. So how does somebody get away with what somebody did at the end? How do they get away with that? And I could sort of understand. But how does Steve walk away from something like that without saying anything?
Steve realizes what's going on is something that needs to happen. He's not going to be, in the end, he's not going to be the one that is going to have to judge these people. It's no longer about him divulging this story. It's about them getting their own, how do I want to say it? It's their own, what it turns out to be, their, I guess I would say he's all involved in the end. Man, it's a delicate way to say that. They will be judged by themselves and by someone bigger than Steve. That's pretty much what I summed up. And Steve got ultimately what he came there for. He just didn't get all of it.
I was hoping they would have found Rebecca alive. Sometimes, you know, you read these books and all of a sudden, oh, yeah, the person's not dead. They just escaped somewhere, but not in this case. So I'm going to read the last page because it's not going to give away anything. But I found this really got me. Steve has found some kind of truth in all the death and madness, but he would have to live with what happened when he uncovered. How do you live with some kind of truth when you know it's one that you would prefer not even knowing?
Steve lives with a lot of demons already. You know, what he did, what he had to do over in Afghanistan, you know.
Yeah.
He'll deal with it because that's what he does. Steve's seen a lot in his life, so this is just, you know, another demon on that list of many of demons on his shoulders.
That's scary, because the title has multiple meanings, a lot of multiple
right.
meanings. And
right.
So is this a standalone?
Yes, it is a standalone. I at the present moment, I don't have any plans on bringing Steve back, but you never know. You know, he might show up.
I was hoping he would.
Let's put it that way. Yeah.
See,
right now,
what is next for you? What are you going to do next?
Okay, next I have In the Pale Light coming out through Watertower Hill Publishing. That is also a crime thriller, and that comes out August 13th of this year. Next May, also with Watertower Hill Publishing, I have my first real thriller coming out called
They
Came
nice.
At Night. So that's what's on my plate for the next year and a half.
Are you going to do another? I have to ask this because they'll kill me if I don't. Are you going to do another book tour with Gina? Because I've done three with them also.
I'm hoping to. Yes. Yeah.
They're really amazing, and they helped me out with Mirror Image. Unfortunately, like I said, a lot of people didn't understand what I wrote. There are so many people in the world that are bad, and those stories that I wrote, most of them were true, by the way. So
yeah.
The people that were in the mirror, some of them deserve to be there. The other half is my Faces Behind the Stone series, where people that died tell their story. And some of them were wrongly accused, some of them voices were silenced, and some of them deserve whatever I gave them and more.
Right.
So, yeah, no, a lot of, I just wrote it because when my sister died, she was died under suspicious circumstances in July of 2010, and I wrote her story because I just wanted to give her some kind of justice, even though there probably will never be any kind of justice for her. What can I say? So Amy and Steve, at the end, I get the feeling that Steve decides that he has to do his own thing. Is that right? Because he doesn't, I don't know. He's going to decide, is he going to stay as a reporter? Or is he going to decide to do something else? Because he's got ethics to a point, but you can't have so many ethics when you're a reporter, I guess.
Yeah. I think Steve is like a dog with a bone when it comes to reporting. You know, a story, he could never let a story go. He could never let, I think reporting is who he is. He has to uncover the truth. Whether that's some kind of truth or it's the truth that he can get out to the public. I don't think he'd ever give this up. Even if he doesn't come back for another story, I you know, in my mind, I think he'll still be out there digging into the depths of depravity of human nature.
Well, I notice when I watch different channels, I switch them constantly between, you know, 247. I don't listen to 5 too much, and 11 is pretty good. And then, of course, there's the, you know, the other stations. And I'm like, all of them are so different, and yet the newscasters, you hear the same story, but they don't tell it the same way, any one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes, because you have to really pick through the truth or whatever. So before we end, where can everybody get all of your books? I'm going to post the review later, and I'm going to later this afternoon, and I will make sure I will read it over before I post it. And I think it's great. The only problem is that Amazon, somebody hacked into my review site. So I'm going to put it on Goodreads and everywhere else. And I will put it on LinkedIn, and I'm sure that you're going to get a lot of hits. So where can everybody find out about you? And
you can find me on Facebook at Wesley Smith Books. You can find me on Instagram at W Smith Books. And you can find me at watertowerhill.com.
You're lucky that you found the publisher. That's the hardest thing in the world, is to get somebody to give a chance to publish their work. So
Some Kind of Truth is actually published with Wicked House Publishing. I have, with my second two books, I have just gone with Water Tower Hill Publishing for my second books, my next books.
Well, I haven't written my next book. Is going to be based on a true life story that I went through for 10 years. And it's going to be based on a real life experience. The only thing I have to find out is if I write the story about what I went through, if I could use the, if I have to change the names of the people involved, or if I could just say who they are. And if I have to change the names, I probably will do an acknowledgement at the end. Yeah, it's scary. But thank you so much, and I hope I get your next one. And you said August, right? So let me know if you want to send it to me in August. It's coming out on my sister's birthday, so it's going to be just very good luck for real. And thank you so much, everybody. It's a beautiful day. Pick up a couple of copies of Some Kind of Truth. Mother's Day is coming. People like to read. Father's Day is coming, and people like to read. And the best present you could give me is a book. Everybody stay safe. Thank you, Wesley, and bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.